Marvelmaniacs, welcome back to another exciting episode of Guardians of the MCU. This is episode number 91, and we are recording this on Monday, March 23rd, 2020. It is not quite the apocalypse yet. I am Tim, and I am joined by Lizzie. How are you tonight, Lizzie?
I really like all of those things that were like, I thought the apocalypse would look like this, but this is how the apocalypse really looks like.
Oh, and
I think
you
posted one from Brianna that I was like, exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
I am ready for the apocalypse, by the way, but this is not the kind of apocalypse I've been preparing for my whole life.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Like, I need to double tap some zombies over here. That's what I'm saying. I'm Lizzie, by the way.
We do have, we've got a bit of news, most of which is not coronavirus related.
Ayo!
Yeah, I think like only one item actually is. We have a couple of discussion items. One is quasi-coronavirus related, but the discussion itself actually isn't going to be. And then we have another discussion item, which is actually a throwdown between Liz and I, who's doing the wavy arm thing right now to try to distract me. And she's like cracking her neck and her knuckles. And she's
I'm
like,
ready.
She's going all rocky on me. I'm going to see her like chasing a chicken pretty soon. And
out of the two of us, which one is more rocky? Get out of here. It's me.
It actually is you. I will fully admit it.
That's right.
You're blonde gangster Rocky.
Blonde, gangster, girly, Rocky. Get out of here. Disney Rocky in the house.
That's right. So before we get into it, we do have a network announcement, and that is that there is a new show that is starting on the network here very shortly. Just recorded their first episode yesterday morning.
Who are they?
I actually know a lot about them.
Are you on it?
I am not on it. The name of the show is Streaming Smarties, and my wife happens to be one of the co-hosts.
Hey, she is a smartie.
The other is April from April and Jay Have No Ideas. And what they are covering there is basically streaming shows, maybe movies, from all the like typical platforms, the Netflix, the Amazon Prime, the Hulu, the whatever.
CBS All Access. Just kidding. Nobody uses.
Yeah, no, we don't even have that. So, And so for the first episode, they actually covered the first five episodes of Hunters, which is over on Amazon Prime. It's the it's set in the 1970s. This is people who are hunting Nazi war criminals. Really, really deep show.
This is your new favorite.
It's really good. It's very, very good. It's a very deep show. There's some little elements of comedy in it. You brought up last week when we were talking about this on Random Chatter that Jordan Peele is actually one of the producers of it. So I'm sure that he's the one who kind of weaves in some of those like the really nuanced comedy things that like you don't expect. Yet it's still somehow really appropriate and it totally works. So they cover the first five.
He's also really good at terrifying people.
Yes, that is also true. So they covered the first five episodes of that in their first episode of Streaming Smarties, which is being edited now and should be up pretty shortly from what I understand. And then they'll be finishing the series over maybe the next couple of episodes. A lot of it depends on like what the show is and how many episodes it has and how deep those episodes are in terms of like how many they're going to be covering per episode of their podcast. So it could be they'll cover a whole series in one show, or they might break that series into two or more shows, depending on the depth and that kind of stuff. So, yeah. So Streaming Smarties, keep a lookout for it. We will have it up. It'll have its own stream, obviously, and it'll also be on the on our network feed for Random Chatter. So,
oh my gosh, I hope they watch Glow. It's so good, and I want them to watch it.
They have quite a list going right now.
Of course, watching streaming things.
Yeah, and they kind of like have this balance between like, they want to hit the stuff that's like, wow, this just came out and we have to cover this. But there's also really great stuff that came out like a few months ago. Like, right. Like the Jack Ryan series that's also on Prime. Like that's really good. Totally worth covering.
Right.
And they're going to hit some different genres of things that like Hunters is very drama. The Jack Ryan one is more drama and action. I'm sure they'll hit something that's comedy. Robin mentioned doing the new Dracula miniseries, which is three episodes. Really, really fantastic. Love that.
I want to do that one.
So, all sorts of different things. And I mean, obviously, we watch an epic crap ton of streaming stuff. A lot of people do. And it's like so accessible. So, yeah, that's what they're going to cover. So it's our first like full-time streaming show. If we don't count like Disney Plus, so like we have our Star Wars Disney Plus show, we're going to have a Marvel Disney Plus show coming up pretty soon.
One day.
So not counting the Disney Plus stuff, this is our first like official full-time streaming show. So that's pretty exciting.
So cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So of course, folks, you can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com. We definitely appreciate reviews and telling folks about us. You can contribute to the network a number of ways. Patreon is fantastic. That is cash directly to us. We are an official IRS nonprofit organization. So before, for previous years, we were bleeding out like 30 or 40% of all the donations, sending those back in taxes, which is kind of silly. Now, all of that stuff is retained by us and goes fully 100% to our operating expenses. We are able to completely maximize your dollar and make it even more worthwhile to you. We're also starting to introduce some new Patreon perks, like at the $10 level. If you're with us for 3 months, at the $10 level, you get a shirt. You get a free shirt. You'll get an email from me saying, hey, I'm Tim. Remember, you get a free Random Chatter shirt from our T Public store, you know, whatever size, color, an available show logo that you want. So, you know,
obviously this show.
Then. Well, yeah, duh. We have Guardians. I mean,
hello. I don't even have this show.
So
I'm the worst.
You know, we'll have that. We're going to have some perks associated with the stuff that we're doing live streaming. Like we just kind of demoed this past weekend, community game night. And so we're going to have, as that becomes more popular, the Patreon perks will also be associated to kind of your placement in line to getting in on those games, because a lot of those games only accommodate like maybe 8 or 10 players. And we want to be able to get people in there. So the perks will also be able to get you kind of it'll be like the Disney Fast Pass. What do they call it? What's the Fast Pass? Yeah. See?
5 points to Gryffindor. Wait, what are you, Gryffindor? No.
Ravenclaw.
You're Ravenclaw.
Yeah, see, you know.
Of course you
totally
are.
Know I'm Ravenclaw.
I know you.
Yeah, you know me.
Wait, is Eric a Slytherin?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. I have to ask him. I don't know if he ever did the test. I gotta ask him that.
John is either a Hufflepuff or a Gryffindor.
He is probably a Gryffindor, but
he's a Griffin Puff.
A Griffin Puff? He might be.
Yeah.
He might be.
I'm a Griffin.
We should totally.
By the way, if you wanted to know.
We should actually like totally do. And like I enjoy it, but I'm not like a huge, huge fan. Actually, April is probably the biggest fan of Harry Potter on the network. Like she is hardcore. I know you're big into it too. Like we should do like a mini series podcast on the Harry Potter movies.
I would be so game for that.
And like movies/books to kind of cover both. But.
And where we do all the tests.
Yes. And everyone does yeah.
My Patronus is a narwhal. I chose that one. It told me it was a dolphin. I said, you're wrong. It's a narwhal.
All right. You know, it's still an aquatic creature and sometimes it needs a little personal clarification. So I'm down with
that. That's why I felt like the test was pretty close. Yeah, I was like, all right, you got aquatic right, but I, you know, it's definitely an narwhal.
Yeah. You just gotta tweak things a little bit. You can't just be agreeable to whatever's given to you.
Listen, the sorting hat takes into account your own personal feelings, just so
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
we should do that.
I mentioned our T Public store. If you go to randomchatter.com/store, you can see all the stuff we have available on T Public. Which is t-shirts and hoodies and baseball shirts, long sleeve shirts. There's mugs,
pillows with
there's
Tim's
pillows
face on.
With my, not really. I should put one up there. It'll be creepy and I'll send you one, Liz.
That's all I want.
And I think actually my wife would probably be okay if you snuggle up to it. I think she's confident enough that, like...
I'm not snuggling up to it. I'm putting it on the wall so I can throw darts at it. Just kidding. I love you. You thought this whole time I wanted to snuggle with your face? No.
You know, Liz, I have...
You should see your face. Let's put it on a pillow. I love you.
I have two feelings, and you hurt one of them. That's
I'm a maniacal lefter.
Yeah, yeah. So we have all sorts of stuff over there. And the great thing about TeePublic is, first of all, reasonable prices, really great quality stuff, especially their shirts. Fantastic quality. They're soft, yet they're still, like, durable. And some of that purchase price actually comes back to us. So, like, when you buy a shirt, we get, like, $3 out of it or something. So
I'm forgetting that people can't see me. I'm doing a lot of, like, jazz hands.
And also, you can join us over at Discord. We have a lot of different conversations over there. We have a number of channels open to the public. So if you just go to randomchatter.com/Discord, you create a Discord account. If you don't already have one, and that'll get you into our lobby and our show channels, and we have a couple of other channels that are open. We do even have a coronavirus channel, just because, I mean, it is...
It's very important.
It is. It's important. It's impacting everyone on the face of the freaking planet, and there were a lot of questions because of what I do. A lot of people were asking me questions, and people want to talk about it, and we wanted to make sure, we wanted to give people a place to talk about it, because it's also one of those things that, like, okay, we're getting bombarded with it. We didn't want it to, like, make its way into, like, every channel in Discord. So we said, okay, let's give it its own channel. We're going to talk about it there. So hopefully that's going to decrease that discussion in other channels, which it largely has. And so you can go to the other channels. And if you don't want to talk about coronavirus stuff, you still can. You can be in those channels and talk about different shows, or Star Wars, or Marvel, or Star Trek, or whatever the heck it is that you want, without having to get bombarded with the coronavirus stuff. But, and also in our channel, in that coronavirus channel, we make sure that, like, we're keeping down speculation, and we have, like, accurate information in there. It's not political. It's real information. It's good information. And because we want to make sure that people have the right stuff.
And we should mention that John's not on tonight because he's basically on the front lines in DC right
yes.
now, dealing with this, like, every yeah. day, every minute. And so he's not going to be probably with us for a while, but when he's back, we'll be very happy to have him back. But he is in it to win it yeah. right now. So we won't be having him on the show for a little bit, probably. Because he, like you, works in this field, and he's in D.C., so, you know,
yeah.
it's he's one of the people really, really working hard out there yeah. on this.
Yeah, so. And thank you, Liz, for mentioning that. So, yeah, so John isn't going to be with us for at least the foreseeable future, but he will be back. He absolutely will be back. He wants...
We love him.
He certainly wants to be on the show. I text with him all freaking day, all the time. And I talk to him several times a week. So, I mean, he's there. He's working hard. He's doing really, really good stuff and kicking butt like he does. So he and I have worked together for
a long
time.
He was actually on Friday, last Friday, he was supposed to come on and do Batch Trick Podcast with
me
and my friend Mel. Yep. But obviously that changed, and we will be rescheduling that. We're going to be talking about Top Gun and, like, our podcast about sex in the yeah. movie. So he was going to join us for that. And obviously his schedule with the coronavirus, changed that. So, you know, we look forward to hearing his
yeah.
voice again on podcast.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Soon.
So, yeah, so that there's our preamble for you. And, with that, on to our news. All right. So our first thing, as I mentioned, we do have a couple of items in here that do have kind of some relation to coronavirus, but we're not going to bombard you with all of that. The first thing on here, folks, is don't be Evangeline Lilly.
Oh, gosh. Okay. What happened? See, okay. I'm working on notes right now, guys. So I'm finding out things as fast paced as you are. Here
That's
we go.
Fine.
Tell me.
I will get you all caught up on this.
Tell me right now.
So, she...
Evangeline.
And it's a shame because I really like her as an actress. And, you know, sometimes you just got to separate the talent from the person. So from Variety here, and there's stuff on this on social media, which actually she posted this stuff on social media. So just going to read this off of Variety because they kind of give the best encapsulation of it. She's basically refusing to self-quarantine during this pandemic, despite advice from health professionals and organizations to stay home and practice social distancing, which we should all be doing. She took to Instagram 3 days ago, where she posted a photo of her morning tea and shared that for her and her family, it's business as usual. I just dropped off my kids at gymnastics camp. They washed their hands before going in. They're playing and laughing. Hashtag business as usual. The post received significant backlash as thousands of comments accused her of being selfish, not taking the spread of the virus seriously. She responded saying that she is living with her father who has stage 4 leukemia. So she put that up there and she said, I'm also immune compromised. So like, here's where things don't make sense. She says, I have two young kids. Some people value their lives over freedom. Some people value freedom over their lives. We all make our choices. But like, she's making choices that are endangering her and her father.
And also others.
And others. Yeah, absolutely. She said she did say that she believes the government has taken too much control and that the virus is just, quote, a respiratory flu.
Oh, God.
She feels that we are too close to martial law for her comfort. And all in the name of a respiratory flu, it's unnerving. Let's be vigilant, be kind, be gracious. But let's make sure that people don't abuse this moment to steal away more freedoms and grab more power.
Oh, good Lord. Okay. so many things. So many things.
Yeah.
Don't be Evangeline. That makes me mad.
It really does. I mean, folks, don't be Evangeline Lilly. I mean, that's really what this comes down to. Be smart about this. I mean, this is a real thing. This is killing people. And our way to slow this down and eventually stop it is to stay the hell home for all of us who possibly can.
Yeah, and also, if you want to start talking about martial law, the only reason to enact martial law is if stupid heads don't stay home.
Yeah.
And you have to actually start enacting martial law in order to keep people from making a poor choice for everybody. I mean, like,
yeah.
Hello? No. Sorry, Evangeline. That makes me really mad and I love you, but eh.
So many people evoke this comment of martial law, which for folks who don't know, it's basically the government taking over society by way of the military, you know, putting the military in the streets and the military is now giving orders and stuff. You may very well be seeing in certain communities that you're in either now or in the future, you may certainly see National Guard forces out there. They're doing a humanitarian mission. They are helping medical care. I mean, I work with a lot of these National Guard folks and they are insanely talented and have incredible resources and can help out a lot. And they're already out there doing stuff, but that does not mean martial law. In this country, we have never had martial law declared. And I mean, I'm again, this is very much related to the stuff that I do. So I'm a bit of a historian on it. We didn't even have martial law on 9/11. So it would take a real freaking lot for us to have martial law.
It takes it like a literal act of God.
Yeah. I mean, do we have societal restrictions now? Yes, we absolutely do. And some of those are actually legally imposed because that's the system that we have. That's a system that we work within. But they make sense. We shouldn't be moving around. We shouldn't be physically social with people. We need to be smart about the stuff that we're doing. And again, we've talked a lot about this virus on a lot of shows. So I don't want to like be real heavy handed with this, but it's just, she's being dumb. I'm sorry.
I think here's the takeaway for this. And then we'll move on. Unless you have anything else to add.
Nope.
I think people right now are showing you who they are. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you find someone who's flippant about a disease that could kill somebody that you love, then maybe you don't want to be around that person. Or maybe that's somebody who doesn't really need to be a part of your inner circle. Or you need to ask deeper questions if they're like your mom.
Be like,
hey, I'm going to put you on house arrest because I care about you and I want you to live.
Exactly.
And I think you should take people at their word that if they, there's a lot, I mean, I think I'm really worried about Florida being the dumbest state in this country and making the worst choices and us being on lockdown for longer than anyone else because we dumb. So
I'm so glad that you came out and said that, Liz.
No. I love Florida. I moved here on purpose. I was raised here, but I know how dumb we are, and I have a lot of beef with Florida. I love it. I moved here on purpose, but I know where I live.
Yeah.
So just so you know, I know where I live. And I'm really worried that we may be here longer than we need to be because people aren't listening and Evangeline doesn't even live here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyways, that's all we need to say about that. Yeah. Stay inside, friends.
So in other news, you're familiar with Richard E. Grant, right?
Richard E. Grant. Who is that?
So he played General Pro in Rise of Skywalker. He's the one who killed, speaking of Harry Potter.
You know how many times I saw Rise of Skywalker and memorized it, don't you?
he's the That's one who had General Hux killed. Choice. He's been in Logan. He's been in Doctor Who. He's been in Game of Thrones. He's been in Hitman's Bodyguard. He was in Bram Stoker's Dracula, Gosford Park. Oh. That's a great movie.
I would know him if I saw him.
Yes. You.
But I wouldn't know him from Star Wars: Rise of Skywalker.
So. He is. He has been added to the cast of Loki, on over on Disney Plus. So, like, that's really cool. That's really exciting. Like, really notable actor, and so yeah, he's
okay. He's going to
be over there. Yeah,
okay.
With not only Tom Hiddleston, but we know Owen Wilson is in it, which is another fantastic thing. And yeah, so that's great. That's going to be, really great actor. We are looking forward to seeing Loki sometime early next year. We don't know how schedules are going to be. We know Loki's production got suspended for the time being, as did everything else. At this point right now, folks, basically count on things being a little fluid. Not only simply because of production times, but also once they are able to get back into production. Like all these studios, all these sound stages, we talked about this over on Random Chatter last night. They all have schedules, and now all their schedules are going to change because obviously they're going to want to let the things that are already in production finish their production. But then, so that's going to push out the things that had, so like soundstage A in Pinewood, Atlanta. Okay, I don't know how they identify these seasons, but we're just going to say Soundstage A. Loki has Soundstage A whenever they come back to finish their thing. Well, so there's a movie who had Soundstage A reserved from August to December. Well, if Loki...
Not anymore!
Yeah, if Loki is still working on it in August, well, then that's going to push out the production of the other thing from whenever Loki ends to however long they need it to be. So
right. There's
going to be a ripple effect that's going to go out an amount of time with this. For the most part, we're probably not going to, we're only going to know about it for the things that have been announced and have given us rough release timeframes. But beyond that, we're not going to, and things will catch up eventually.
Like, literally take that formula and apply it to everything in life, and then maybe you'll have a more realistic expectation upon the world after coronavirus.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good rule of thumb, right? Yeah.
Just, we're just adding some number of months to it, and the thing is, you don't know. Their production may be able to go faster. Their post-production might be able to streamline the post-production so they can still release on time. You never know.
Okay, everyone remember the writer's strike and how it really, really affected
all
the shows and everything. I was actually on in Confessions of a Shopaholic during the writer's strike.
Yeah, when you were in New York City,
Yeah, when I was in New York and they didn't have a script and they were just basically working off, I don't know how they continued that production in the midst of a writer's strike, but they had no script and they were just like I think you can really tell from watching it now, actually. When I go back, I'm like, oh, of course they didn't have a script, obviously. And that's how I was able to even get in the movie and get like a line and get paid for it or whatever. For those of you who don't know that, I'm in that movie.
And Liz makes millions on it. She gets like a residual check every few months for like $1.31. It's amazing.
I got a residual check for $30. And I was like, what? I'm sorry, what?
Wow.
I mean,
they must have like sold rights to Netflix or something. I don't know.
I mean, they had to, because that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah,
maybe,
yeah.
If not longer. Yeah. And for the longest time, even right after making it, I'd get like $5, $6, and then it would be like $1.38, like whatever.
Yeah.
And then recently, because of streaming, it's like $16, $18. And then I got $30 and I was like, I'm sorry, I am rich. It's shocking to get $30 just because it's like so not the norm for my residual check for that movie. That's the only thing I get residual checks for. But anyways, the point is that it makes me think of the writer's strike, where that really had an effect on, rightfully so, productions like Lost had a huge impact. Like that season, you feel the writer's strike like greatly. When you watch it again, you're like, oh yeah, of course,
because
of the writer's strike. Lots of shows have that impact. So I think we're going to, when we look back, we're going to be like, oh, that season was greatly impacted by coronavirus, and that's why it's weird.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It may be, we might see things, they might be a little disjointed. And I don't expect Disney productions are going to be that way, because they're obviously going to
they
make hardcore investments into stuff to make sure that these things work. But you may see some other things, maybe TV series, maybe even some movies here and there, that seem a little disjointed, like someone, like their physical features maybe are a little bit different or whatever. And of course, I mean, for folks who don't know, TV shows and movies are so often they're filmed out of order. They're not filmed from beginning to end.
It's why Firefly did not fly. Yeah.
They film to maximize the set that they have. So if the set that they're in, that they're shooting in right now, is in the first 5 minutes of the movie, in a middle 5 minutes of the movie, in the last 5 minutes of the movie, they're going to shoot all 15 minutes of that content in the set while they're in the set before they change it, because it costs them way more money to tear down and set up that set over and over again. And to fly actors around and all that crap. So they maximize it. It all revolves around sets and sound stages and physical locations, wherever they might travel to, they maximize that stuff to the best of their ability.
I know we said we weren't going to talk about coronavirus a lot, but I have a feeling we are.
Well, so we're going to try not to.
It's a real part of our lives.
It really is. I mean, it does impact everything. And fortunately, there are other things to report on and other things to talk about. And so we want to keep some kind of a balance to this, because we know people are kind of inundated with this. It's in every news cycle for everything.
And you might need an escape.
So yes, here your dose of reality is, hey, there's stuff that coronavirus is impacting, but
what's our next one?
We have stuff that it doesn't. So our next one, this is now it's tangentially MCU related. It's related to the MCU by a relationship, a former relationship.
If it's Sony, it doesn't count.
Nope, it is not Sony.
Okay.
This is like...
No, I feel about
this
that.
Is kind of like like an old boyfriend kind of thing.
I don't have any of those.
Okay, so it's like an old girlfriend for me.
Okay, all right. I don't have any of those either.
We've talked a lot here about Rosario Dawson.
Tim is struggling so much.
I am. I really am. You,
okay,
Liz, you got to work with me sometimes here.
I'm trying. Go ahead. I love you. Keep going.
We've talked a lot here about Rosario Dawson. She was in the Netflix Marvel shows as Night Nurse. I've been talking about her a lot on this show because I would love her to play She-Hulk. I think she is like the perfect casting for She-Hulk. She is my fan cast for She-Hulk. She is a phenomenal actress. She's
definitely not going to be She-Hulk now.
Maybe not. I don't know. I mean, I still think she has like great physicality for it. She has a perfect presence. she, so that's our relationship to this. That's our only kind of MCU-ish relationship, for as much as the Netflix things were MCU. But really relevant, because she is an actress that we're familiar with on this side of things. She was just announced, well, not announced by Disney or confirmed by Disney, but the Hollywood Reporter and Variety both put it up. And if they did, that's darn near confirmed. Because
and then everyone else grabbed it real fast. IGN, Fandom, everybody was on it real quick.
Yeah. Like, Hollywood Reporter and Variety, they don't spend a lot of time in the rumor space. Like, and because they have such good relationships with Disney and with the components of Disney, like Marvel Studios and Lucasfilm, they don't screw around with that stuff. So if they put it up, it's pretty much true. Rosario Dawson got cast as our first live-action Ahsoka. And
as far as we know.
And as far as we know. And she's going to be in season 2 of The Mandalorian. So... terrifically exciting, because Ahsoka is probably next to Admiral Thrawn, probably the most anticipated character to come from animation to live action. She's like one of the most beloved characters in kind of this new generation of Star Wars. Really, really excited about this. And we talked about this a lot over on Echo Base last night, so you'll get a lot of our discussion over there. But I definitely thought it was worth bringing up here, because it is Rosario Dawson, and she's phenomenal, and she has a Marvel connection, and we love her here. We're big fans.
And to be fair, her inclusion in the Star Wars universe does not preclude her from the Marvel universe. As we know, there's plenty of crossover.
Right.
It just does seem like if she's taking such a big role, that it wouldn't necessarily mean she'd be taking such a big role over on the Marvel side. But especially because she, I mean, if they ever did want to pull the trigger on Night Nurse in the MCU at proper, because it is technically the MCU, even though it's really not, then they'd have her, and then if you really wanted to, like, double cast her, it would be tricky.
Yeah.
But I kind of think her casting as Ahsoka means she would not be She-Hulk. That's just a gut feeling, not a confirmation from the executives.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's from a practical perspective, you're probably
just
right.
From a scheduling.
I mean, yeah, and the right? scheduling. I mean, yeah. Maybe they could work it out. Maybe they wouldn't. Don't really know. From a character portrayal perspective, she's going to be wearing makeup in both of them. You know, if I mean, one is Ahsoka's kind of patterned face paint, and then if she's She-Hulk, she's green. So
yeah, but it puts her in the makeup chair longer for both.
It really does. And of course, you know, her as She-Hulk is just really, that's been my fan cast. Because yes. I would love to see her in that. So while some people have talked about that, that's just kind of been a speculation thing. There's nothing confirmed.
But that's what happened with Ahsoka. It was only fan cast for such a long time, and then it like trickled up.
It's true. She actually was talked about for quite a while as Ahsoka.
Forever.
And forever. She is apparently also a Star Wars fan. And to an extent, I guess from what I heard, like, she actually kind of softly pursued that too. Like, she wanted to be Ahsoka. And so that's also awesome that, like, in casting, they grabbed a person who knows the character, who is a fan of the character, who's a fan of the franchise, and who also is a great pick for that character.
Dear stars of our world, if the fans are behind you, you have a better chance. Because mm-hmm. We'll just keep tweeting it. I mean, I wasn't. I like her, but, like, I don't have any skin in the game of who they pick.
Yeah.
I think they'd pick someone great. My cousin is a huge fan, and we've been talking about it. He texted me immediately and was like, is it real? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I mean, I didn't get direct confirmation from Disney Plus, but it seems real.
Yeah.
And the one thing we were kind of discussing is the voicing will be very different. Ashley Eckstein does a much higher,
yes.
lilting, much younger sounding voice mm-hmm. to her. Even in Rebels, yeah. she still has a lighter, higher pitched mm-hmm. voice. And Rosario Dawson has a much lower timbre yeah. and is much more of a rougher voice to her. So it'll be very interesting to sort of get used to a different
yes.
voice.
Yeah, yeah. Rosario Dawson, I mean, her natural voice is, I mean, she's Latina. She's I'm pretty sure she's from New York City because she has a, I can't pinpoint exactly which borough, maybe Queens, I don't know, but she does have a slight New York City accent to her, which, I mean, as an actress, I'm sure that she has the range to be able to vary that. I think as Night Nurse, she didn't bother because it was set in New York City anyway. But yeah, I mean, there is going to be a difference there. It'll be interesting to see what she can do because a lot of times it is higher or it's difficult for people to speak in a higher tone than they usually do without like crackling and like falsetto, weird falsetto
harder
stuff.
Harder to go lower too. Yeah. I mean, if you saw Bombshell with Charlize Theron about the Roger Ailes sexual harassment case, Charlize Theron talks about dropping her voice. I think it was 3 octaves to play Megyn Kelly and the challenges that come along with dropping your voice so many octaves. And I imagine the same challenges would exist to raise it. And I think what's interesting about, we're spending a lot of time on a Star Wars thing. Sorry, but I didn't get to talk about it yet. I think the interesting thing is that like her and Thrawn are also the only two that we haven't, like everybody else had a different voice on screen and then had a different voice in Rebels or Clone Wars, but it went like that way.
Yes.
But this is going like that way. And so
totally.
There's such a different expectation because I think it's easier to forgive a cartoon animated character, not cartoon, but animated character than it is a live action character. And so I think that like people are going to be much harder on her because we have only seen her in an animation form. And now we're going to see her in live action and people are going to be super hard on her. It's like, it's like a book to movie kind of thing in a different way. But I think people are going to be really hard on her. So anyway, sorry, Star Wars. But, you know, we all love Star Wars, right?
I actually just looked up her IMDb profile. She is from New York City. So I was right
on that one. I thought that one was fact. She was in Rent. If you're not from New York and you're in Rent, wrong.
That is true. That's very true. So we do have a little bit of speculation rumor here. And so this was something that Kevin Smith remarked on pretty heavily. It didn't come from him. It's been a rumor kind of milling about a bit, but because Kevin Smith is such an outspoken and popular voice within kind of, you know, nerd culture, geek culture, especially in relation to things that are comic book related. He talked on his show about this rumor that Peter Parker in Spider-Man 3 is going to be represented by an attorney. And there's apparently some very heavy speculation that Charlie Cox is going to be playing the role of that attorney. Charlie Cox, again, going back to the Netflix Marvel stuff, we know played Daredevil.
If this speculation isn't true, I'm coming for you, Kevin Smith. I want it to be true. I love Charlie Cox.
Oh, I would absolutely love it to be true. I mean, you know, Charlie Cox did a phenomenal job as Matt Murdock. He did a great job as Daredevil. I would love to see his career in that character be extended and made officially a part of a real part of the MCU. I think it'd be amazing.
Please. So. Please make it true. I've never cared this much about a speculation in my life. If this isn't true, I'm going to be mad at you for telling me that because no one will hold a candle.
Yeah. I love it. So Kevin Smith did go out there and he said, Kevin Smith does have relationships in the industry, but he did say in this instance, he has no inside info. He was just discussing this as a rumor that, you know, the rest of us have seen. So he did put that disclaimer out there, which I think was good of him to put that out there because people know he does have some connections. Yeah. I think just to kind of extend that a touch, what I want to offer up a bit is our thoughts, which our thoughts could just simply be hopeful wishes. If this is
that's
the
all
case,
mine are.
Are we going to see Daredevil get his own film and or Disney Plus series?
I think it's just really highly unlikely. I just think that they have really like cut it real quick. And I just think that means that you'd be opening yourself up to a canon of very like R-rated content. And I just think Disney Plus is trying to stay away from that, sadly. I think that that's sadly the case because I don't really understand the whitewashing of life, honestly. Like the clean, the squeaky clean washing of life. I'm not really on board with it. But I get it. They're Disney Plus. I wish they wouldn't let that deter it, but I have a feeling that that is a deterrent to them. I don't know if they could consider it just like part of the world, but not part of the world, but the characters available to add in that we would all like freak out if they did.
Yeah, I think if they did bring Charlie Cox in to do this, I think it would be mostly from the perspective of the studio recognizes that he was fantastic in the role and that the fans loved him in the role. If they did anything with Matt Murdock or Daredevil, I think it would be basically a reboot. I don't think that they would be reflecting on anything that happened in the Netflix series. So I think that's kind of where we would be with that. Because like you said, they don't really... Disney Plus does not want to have the Netflix stuff. The Netflix stuff was way too edgy and hardcore for Disney Plus. And so they're reluctant to have that relationship. They may be willing enough to have the relationship of the actor continuing to play that character, but they would reboot it. They would reboot it.
Yeah, I see that happening more often than not, but I wish that they would take that opportunity. I wish they would take the opportunity to know that the actor was so good and we all really liked him so much that it would be worth taking a chance to reboot him in that role rather than recast him in the role. So yeah. I hope they know that that's really what we would prefer over any option. Like, I don't care if they ignore his origin story and like do whatever they want. I just need him to be Daredevil. Then I can have it in my own headcanon and live happily ever after.
Yeah, I agree. So over to our discussion points. There's the first one here, I think, is going to be fairly short because I think you and I are just going to kind of maybe have some brief thoughts on it, and that's it. The second one is going to be finally the grand debate. This is going to be the main event, and it is going to be which is better, Iron Man 2 or Iron Man 3?
Obviously, Iron Man 3.
Well, I mean, you can
fix it. Fix it. Oh, a debate ended. You're welcome. That was quick.
We're not even there yet, Liz. We're not even
there. Ah, give me the medal now.
So our first discussion item. We know Black Widow is going to be delayed. Now, Black Widow is technically part of Phase 4, but it kind of doesn't matter. I mean, unless there is something that is included in the Black Widow movie, almost like circumstantially, that happens to relate to a, I'll say, proper Phase 4 film being a film that is within the continuity, the timeline of Phase 4. Largely, I don't think that when they do release Black Widow, that it really is going to have any impact on Phase 4. I don't think that it matters. I mean, it sucks that it's being delayed. I freaking want to see this movie.
Same.
But I don't think that its timing is necessarily going to have any impact on any other Phase 4 films. What do you think?
I think that when I thought that Far From Home was really going to be an epilogue on the Infinity Saga,
same.
And it wasn't. It was impactful, and it really... Was it a beautiful, necessary part of the piece of the puzzle of like us saying goodbye to Tony in a way through Spider-Man, through Peter Parker? And rather than being an actual epilogue on the story, it was definitely like a jumping off point of allowing to us to grieve, allowing us a breath of fresh air and humor. And I really was very surprised by the tone of what I saw there. And so I wonder if Black Widow will really be the epilogue on the Infinity Saga in that it's adding flavor to something that has come before it. But I do foresee them taking the opportunity to like throw something in an end credit scene, throw something forward into what we're going to see in the future. I definitely would put that, especially because she's around both Bucky and Sam at that time, mm-hmm. how hard would it be for her to throw to the Disney Plus series and really be something unprecedented to throw to the TV series coming forward? I think that would be something interesting and different that we haven't seen, and would be an easy sort of throw to something in the future without like having to be a part of the Eternals or part of Shang-Chi or anything else like that. But I do think the story of Black Widow itself will sort of be an epilogue of what we've seen. A farewell to her, mm-hmm. the character that we really have been waiting for so long and didn't get, and a character that we had to say goodbye to too soon. I think that will really be the epilogue that we didn't get in Far From Home and didn't need in Far From Home.
Sure,
we needed something different.
No, that
so that's what I think.
That's a really interesting perspective. And I got it. Something that you brought up has me now thinking in a completely different tangent on something. And you mentioned the end credit scene. And so I'm then kind of wondering, so the mid credit and end credit scene for this, one, are they going to have them? And two, what are they going to be? Because it's really interesting. I mean, this movie takes a step back. It's set after Civil War. And so initially, you know, the initial thought is, well, if they have any end or middle credit scene, all it's really doing is presumably setting us back into the timeline of like Infinity War, Endgame kind of stuff. But on the other hand, depending on how things shake out in the Black Widow movie, like with, say, Taskmaster, if Taskmaster lives in this movie, that could kind of be the tie-in, Liz, that you just mentioned, that maybe Taskmaster somehow ends up in something like Falcon and Winter Soldier. And the end credits scene from Black Widow becomes that connection.
This is what I do for America.
This is the service you provide. This is, yeah.
This is what I'm here for. The other thing is, like, it's not like Shang-Chi was born after the Infinity Saga. Mm-hmm. He was, you know what I mean? His age says that if they did what they did with Doctor Strange with any of the coming stories, there's a way for them to add this in as a flavor in Black Widow that we don't even see coming. The way that you know how you can't watch Doctor Strange where in the release date order because it doesn't belong there because the majority of it happened while all of the other movies were going because he was becoming who he was going to become. We don't know that that's not true of Shang-Chi or any of the other heroes coming that we haven't seen their stories yet. So what's interesting is that Marvel knows already. They've
of
known
course.
This is just who they are. Mm-hmm. And this movie is an opportunity and a farewell to mm-hmm. the fans. It's a farewell to Black Widow. It's a farewell to what she represented, what we kind of were hoping for. It's a gift and it's a farewell, but it's a kicking off to what you're talking about, potential connections. Yeah. Taskmaster is a great example, but it's also like, we don't know what the timeline of Phase 4 even is. So I think there's so much potential. And I think if Marvel's anything, it's strategic. So I think that it has a place, and everything else being postponed will have to be postponed till after this movie comes out, because it's all going to be dominoes in the big puzzle of our lives.
Well, and the thing is that I guess kind of the timing of this still works out, or the impacts of what we're dealing with coronavirus actually still conveniently work out in all of this, because not only is the release of Black Widow getting delayed, but there's a production delay in Falcon and Winter Soldier. So while they're finishing that up. So again, we're not saying that these two are related, but if they were, that still works out. And of course we do know also, and you kind of bring up a good point, that sometimes those end credit scenes actually have nothing to do with the movie that they follow.
Oh yeah. I mean, most of them didn't.
Yeah. I mean, how many of them were like, okay, whatever XYZ movie, we saw the story, end credits scene is Thanos, who had nothing to do with that story.
Well, and that the payoff didn't come for years later, so...
Yes, I mean, exactly.
I mean, there's so much potential for throwing it to the future. I mean, how cool would it be for Blade to show up? I don't know. You know he's coming. So,
yeah.
I'm just saying. You could do anything. And we would just be waiting with bated breath and we wouldn't need it for the future. And everything else is definitely going to come after Black Widow. Because the thing about it is, at Comic-Con, when they showed the timeline, they were all in a timeline together. Falcon and Winter Soldier, Loki, the Eternals, Black Widow, they're all in a timeline together. They all have impact in the same universe. So they're not going to be like, oh, well, wait on Black Widow till after Falcon. It's all going to be in the order that originally was put in that timeline, because that's how they wanted us to see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that hasn't changed. It just, I mean, the coronavirus is adjusting our schedule and, you know, changing our lives, but it's not going to change the actual way we're going to see these things. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Just a bit lighter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I still don't think it's going to necessarily have the delay of Black Widow itself is going to have any particular impact on phase four stuff.
No.
But yeah, that the mid and purely the post credit scene will still have, I think, if they do have them, will have some tie to something that's going to be upcoming, not necessarily something that already happened.
I think Black Widow is just a beautiful icing on Infinity Saga that, like, we needed for ScarJo's character.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
it's icing, you guys, but it doesn't mean that you can't take a little scoop out and take a taste for the future.
Wow.
You know, aren't you ever at a party and you're like, I'm going to eat the cake first? Just kidding. I've never done it. I would. I think you wouldn't be surprised if I did it, but I never have. That's what the back of the cake is for. That's why they made that's why they made backs of cakes.
I don't even know what to say.
Don't come at me. You're about to lose. So, you know, it's fine.
So I don't know about losing here. So, yes, folks, our main event, Iron Man 2 or Iron Man 3. Here is the thing, Liz.
That you're wrong.
I know.
It's totally fine.
I know all your arguments against Iron Man 2. And the interesting thing is, not only do I agree with them, but I will use them to leverage my win.
Wrong. But I'd like to see you try.
So I think instead of like each one of us going on a whole long tirade, I think we should go point for point. So like,
but first start where you got this from, because it came on Twitter and everybody was losing their minds about which was the worst MCU movie, which is the weirdest thing to come out of coronavirus. Who has the time? We've already done this.
Well, you and I have been debating this for a long time, but kind of in passing. We haven't had a chance to actually.
And the answer is 4-2, by the way, just so you know.
We haven't actually had a chance to debate this. But yes, you're right. Lately, there has been this thing on Twitter that's been going around saying, you know, hey, which is worse, Thor 2 or Iron Man 3?
And it's Thor 2, by the way. Which is worse than Iron Man 2.
I will agree. Thor 2 is worse than Iron Man 3.
So we'll start off with an agreeance and then we'll go toe-to-toe. Get in the ring, Tim.
So like Iron Man 2 is like in the first half of favorite MCU movies and Iron Man 3 is in the bottom half of favorite MCU movies.
How is it in the first half of favorites?
Because it's really damn good.
How is it not sitting steadily in the middle of nowhere, by the way?
I will let you go first. We'll do a point.
No, you're going first.
You want me to go first? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's fine. So I will. So first of all, instead of arguing against Iron Man 3, I will first argue for Iron Man 2.
Okay. I like that. We need Robin to introduce us. I'm the summer ring. All right. Go ahead.
So for Iron Man 2. The characters, so topically, I'll put this out here. The characters that we get, first of all, we get Rhodey, a new Rhodey. And associated with Rhodey, we have War Machine, which is phenomenal. I'm a big fan. We have Hammer, who I love. I think he's absolutely hilarious.
I love my Sam Rockwell. I adore him.
We have evolutions of the Iron Man armor. And we have our introduction to Black Widow. Tell me how Iron Man 3 possibly beat that. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you first. You're still going first.
No. I figure instead of us like each going on long rants, we just kind of get like I'll offer
point
something
for point.
And then
okay,
yeah,
point for point.
We're going to make this a table tennis match here.
I do agree that Black Widow's entrance saves the movie. I've always said that. I do. I think that
it was already a good movie.
It is the saving grace of that stupid movie. Okay, it is the saving grace. I think. Trying to think of a way not to just rip it apart because it's incredibly sexist. It is the most sexist movie in the MCU. It is toxically sexist and toxic male gaze sexist, by the way. Sorry to just stand on that tent pole for a long time, but it's partly the reason why I hate it so much.
I knew it, and I knew you were going to make that point.
I knew you knew I was going to make that point because it's the only point to make. But it also unravels a lot of what we learn about Tony Stark in the first movie because he goes through an arc from being in the cave to the end of the movie that he's already a sexist jerk in the beginning of Iron Man. We don't need him to roll back and then be that again. I think what we have lost in Iron Man 2 is the progression of him as a character, as a person of substance. And I think he becomes that in Iron Man 1. So to roll that back and then to make him basically that same person we meet at the beginning of Iron Man 1 is a disservice to an arc of a character and a trilogy in this saga. The end. Goodbye. You're welcome. Good luck.
All right. So,
keep going.
So my counterpoint to this. So you had two primary points. One was the sexism, particularly toward Natalie, right?
In general.
Okay. And then the second one was what you feel to be the lack of progression of the character of Tony.
I feel like it's a rolling back of his character.
Okay. So I'll address that one first.
Go ahead.
I think that if you. I think you really have to take a look at the journey of Tony Stark in this. And yes, certainly you are absolutely right that in the first Iron Man movie, he has a pretty incredible progression. But we see that being very incomplete. And we still see at the very end of the movie, we continue to see the arrogance of Tony Stark in his very final statement saying, "I am Iron Man."
Sure.
So there's a lot of himself, like that deep part of himself that we haven't lost. And so going into Iron Man 2, I think there's a few things that are kind of working against him, if you will, in terms of him being a better person. One is now that he basically has stardom compounded. Not only is he the CEO of this, gazillion dollar corporation, but he's also Iron Man and everyone knows him as Iron Man. So that's a challenging thing. And
your classic Justin Bieber downfall. I got
it. Yeah. And he also perpetuates that. I mean, when we look at the congressional testimony in this movie, which is absolutely hilarious. I love that scene with the congressional testimony. That is, I mean, he is totally, fully exhibiting the arrogance of Tony Stark in this. And so he's battling a few different things. He's battling that stardom. He's battling, interestingly enough, they don't go real hardcore into it in the films. Although Iron Man 2 kind of dives the closest into it, and that is related to the comics, the severe alcoholism that Tony Stark
has. Really
go
into it very much.
I mean, they show him drunk at a party in this movie, which getting drunk is not alcoholism, just to set that straight.
Nope.
And I also don't want to really drag the comic book character into it because those are very different characters, but there is. He's a disturbed character. And a big part of that also is so this antithesis where he has this big high from this compounded stardom that he has. His low is that the thing that's keeping him alive is poisoning. And
sure.
and he can't overcome it. So there's a depression there, and he's trying to cope with and in fact usually overcompensate for that depression. So we have a really, like, while he seems to be a very superficial character, he's not. He's really very, very complex. And his progression is not as, it's not as simple as we would like it to be. So that I offer that, first of all, in terms of Tony Stark. In terms of the thing with Natalie, yes, absolutely. The clothing, the camera angles, the early behavior, absolutely, totally sexist. But there's a couple things that I'll offer with that. First of all, when we see her, she was introduced. She's not dressed that much differently than Gwyneth is.
Minus about 3 buttons, by the way.
It may be that, but we're talking heels, short pencil skirt. We have a blouse that's open. So not hugely, and it's not trashy. She's professional. She's introduced as being part of the company's legal team. But yes, there was obviously they were trying to draw out the sexism of ScarJo in this. But also, like, within minutes of introducing her, she gets into a boxing ring and she drops Hap.
It doesn't mean she's not a powerful character.
Right. So what I'm saying, and obviously the whole thing with Hap was also very tongue-in-cheek, because we know that Hap isn't, like, he's not a powerhouse. He was always there to kind of be a comedy relief sidekick. So I'm not, like, setting Hap up to be like, oh, well, he was like Hulk. Nothing like that. But she did step in, she did this thing, and so I think what they're trying to show there is kind of this dichotomy of, hey, you can be super hot and you can be totally badass at the same time. And so that's how they set up the character, and especially with this being her first appearance of many, many appearances. And we know that she's a spy. We know that she is, at least to an extent, a you know, spies are kind of supposed to be chameleons. They're supposed to be able to blend in. They're supposed to be able to use their best attributes. And certainly for ScarJo, that is that she's wildly hot. So she's going to use that to her benefit. So while I absolutely agree with you that it was sexist, I think that it wasn't out of place. Back to you.
Go. What I will say to that is that I think there is a difference for me in a character being sexist, like Tony Stark super duper is in the first movie. He is a sexist.
Oh, totally.
A-hole, and he's very much fine with sleeping his way through whoever and whatever, and doesn't care about the actual person behind whatever, and just treating women like disposable objects. That's kind of who he is in the first movie. And then for the difference for me is for the movie itself to treat that character like a sexual object, that is like her butt over her personality, her ass over her, you know, backstory, her boobs over anything else. And I think what they do, the shots that you see of her in the cafe when Nick and Robert Downey Jr. are talking, and the first thing you see is ScarJo in her outfit and she's a superhero, is her ass. And that is unbelievable to me for a movie to treat a huge character, a character that is going to become a part of the Avengers, the only female Avenger, to treat her like an ass in the movie. To me, is the reason why I dislike it so much. And there's not a lot else besides that, other than my bird. Shut up about your bird. I hate you. I hate Whiplash with a red hot fury. I wish Hammer had been the big bad. I think if you had brought... Okay, here's my thing about it.
Let's talk about Vanko.
No, wait, first. Okay. Let me just finish this whole thing about ScarJo. I think... When you have one female character, which is my entire upbringing, was there's Sarah Connor, one mm-hmm. female character. Princess Leia, one mm-hmm. female character. April O'Neil, one female character. And you treat her like she is just a sexual right. object. And there are plenty of spy things out there. Alias, Salt, plenty of things with female spies that aren't just treated like that sexual object. Like, I'm a spy, therefore I have to be mm-hmm. a sexual object. Like, that to me is a disservice to the only female character you have in your franchise.
I won't disagree with that.
The only female superhero you have
in your
franchise.
I won't disagree with that at all.
So, I know you don't. And I respect your opinion. I just think that, like, there is a difference between the way that they dress Gwyneth and the way that they dress ScarJo. And yes. one is powerhouse CEO and the other, excuse me, but a slutty secretary. And it is 100% something that women have had to audition for is either you get to be slutty secretary or powerful CEO. Mm-hmm. And there's a lack of understanding that, like, you can be a thousand sure. different things sure. at once. And men get mm-hmm. to have nuance, and women get to be an ass when they mm-hmm. become a superhero. And that pisses me off above all else in this movie, aside from Vanko. And let me just say one more thing about Vanko before yeah, yeah. you go on your thing. Okay. If you saw Birds of Prey and Ewan McGregor's portrayal in Birds of Prey, it reminded me a lot of Sam Rockwell in Charlie's Angels mm-hmm. in the 90s. And his, like, nuanced, likable, horrible bad guy. And the thing I wish that Hammer had been versus what he actually was the reason partly why I don't like Vanko, because he's unnecessary in my eyes. Why do you even need him? He's so stupid. I hate him. I hate him so much. And don't talk to me about Mandarin when we get there.
Oh,
I don't care.
Oh,
about
we're going to talk about that. Like, we're going to talk about that a lot.
Well, you can talk about it, but it's not why I care about the movie at all. I don't care about that part of it. But I just think he's so unnecessary, and it really did a disservice for how good Sam Rockwell is as a bad guy to have, like, this, like, extra dumb, my bird. My bird. Shut up about my bird. Oh, tell me why that's redeemable right now.
So,
go.
First of all, Sam Rockwell.
This is just absolutely
love Sam Rockwell in this role as Hammer. He was absolutely perfect through the entire movie. He is that character. He is 100%. He's perfect. I don't know of anyone who doesn't like Sam Rockwell in the role of Justin Hammer. And
I just think he deserved more. Yeah. That's all.
And especially the, like, he's a great counterpoint to Tony because they both have this wit to them. And while when they're toe to toe, Tony's wit absolutely overtakes Hammer's, but Hammer still has this, he has a charisma about him that is, it does compete with Tony's. So I love everything about Sam Rockwell and Justin Hammer in this movie. Phenomenal. So Vanko, I will absolutely admit that Whiplash, and they don't actually say this villain's name in the movie. And again, making the comic book reference here, the character of Whiplash that Vanko plays, and the portrayal of him is fairly lame. I won't say totally lame, but fairly lame.
I'll give you
There is some potential to the character, and I think that the setup was okay. The whole thing in Monaco gave some, I think, legit stakes to it. And then they did end up, they diminished the character some. But where the character, where Vanko redeems himself is that he became the catalyst. He was the tool of Justin Hammer to build the Hammer drones, which weren't supposed to be drones in the first place. But then that's the genius of Vanko in doing this, is building the drones, convincing Hammer that the drones are better than people. So he didn't want suits. He wanted drones because drones can be controlled, which Hammer eventually thought, oh, okay, drones can be controlled. That's way better. But that's exactly what Vanko wanted. So Vanko created his own army of these like super mega drones. And the battle that took place, and also the in the midst of this then was also the fundamentally the theft of the Mark II armor, which then became War Machine, upgraded by Justin Hammer and Vanko. And again, I love War Machine. And so this part was just awesome to me. And then the so we had this just whole epic scene of War Machine versus Iron Man until War Machine got rebooted by ScarJo. And then the two of them against the Hammer drones. But then the failure of this was then when Vanko showed up in his suit, which was supposed to be, should have been better than the Whiplash that we saw at the beginning of the movie, but was not. It was like that fight was way shorter than the fight we saw in the beginning of the movie. So it's like the beginning of the movie, they set up phenomenal stakes, like really high stakes with Vanko, making this thing essentially low budget. You know, he was in whatever Siberia, didn't have a lot of resources, came up with this thing, cool idea, cool thing, did some great stuff. And then through the movie had phenomenal resources and built this suit, which was really intended to be way more powerful than the original thing, but then really wasn't. It was very lame. And yes, I know he was against fundamentally two Iron Mans, versus in the beginning, he was only against one, but still it just didn't seem to be that fell kind of short. So to me, it's not necessarily Vanko himself. It's how that the story of Vanko and Whiplash was written, but everything Vanko did in between, I love. And you know what? I don't care about the birds. I care about the bird. I care.
It's just symbolistic of how much I care about the bird
as much as Hammer did. And Hammer didn't give a damn about the bird.
He's like, this is your bird. Okay. To add flavor to what you're saying. I think it's a disservice to how good Sam Rockwell is as a villain to have Vanko then be endgame, as far as like who's gonna be the showdown. And to also pit Hammer against Tony as any sort of like not intellectual equal, but like charismatic equal or sort of equal in any way. It sort of reminds me of, don't get mad that I'm using this reference because I understand and I'm with you. But the way that Spider-Man 3 attempted to make Eddie and Peter equals, like mirror images of each other. It's a flawed film.
No, I'm done with that comparison. I get where you're going with that. That's fair.
But I think what they were trying to do is mirror images of what I really like about Spider-Man 3, which is like one thing and only one thing, and this is the only thing I like and everything else I hate, is that a person with superhero powers could easily make the choice to be bad as he could to be good. And the mirror image that we see, whether that be Eddie versus Peter or Hammer versus Tony, is our life circumstances adding up against us or for us. And what I wanted most was for Hammer to be the person on the other side of the mirror for Tony. And for the disservice that this movie did to him, it's not even my least favorite part of the whole thing, honestly. It's really Tony's arc and the sexism really hit the marks for me. But it's another reason I dislike it, is that knowing that Sam Rockwell is so good at what he does, I've been a fan of, like, when I saw him on Charlie's Angels and I was so on board with him, and when he does that spin and Drew Barrymore is like, I'm sorry, you're the bad guy? I was like, wait, he is? Like, I felt deceived by him. So I feel like I have this, like, deep-seated love for Sam Rockwell and knowing what he's capable of, and it being a disservice to how good he is and how he could really be the mirror image to Tony and wasn't allowed to be because they wanted Mickey Rourke to be the bad guy. Get the F out of here for me. Like, that to me is, like, All right, you wanted the flashy suit rather than the character arc. What does it mean for two people to go through similar life stations and one to pick the bad mm-hmm. side and one to pick the good side? You know, like, and not even good and bad, the grays of each side. I think it's a disservice to the story at overall, and that's a mirror of how I feel overall in Tony's story in this movie. I just think it's a disservice to him as a character to just roll back who he is versus what I see in him in Iron 3 is a real excavation of character and rolling back to becoming, to going even back before Iron Man 1 into who he really is and who he is in his soul. And I think for me that is where Iron Man 2 loses me. And no shade if you love it, so, honestly.
So let's talk about Iron Man 3. yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Defend your champion.
All right, here we go. Iron Man 3 to me is a story of somebody who has had everything that he had gotten used to taken away from him. And he has to return to the man that he was even before he began this journey. And I think to see him return to the tinkerer, the person who puts things together, the person who sat at his father's foot and really like wondered, especially with the end game stuff when he meets his father, that really adds flavor to that for me, because I think he had this whole pedestal with his father. And then he's sort of returning to who his father was in this moment of like, you know, even being a father figure in a way, not, you know, reluctantly to this kid who really like saw in him a leader and saw in him somebody he wanted to be. I really related to that sort of relationship and the rolling back of him as a character. Now, you can 100% hate on the Mandarin thing. I had no connection to Mandarin as a character because I never read the comic book. So it being a bait and switch for me, I didn't care. I can see why people don't like that, and I completely understand that as part of your argument. But what I like about what I saw was the mirror of terrorism in our culture mm-hmm. being played out on screen. And I think using terrorism in a time when we were going through so much with ISIS and terrorism in general brings it into our real world in a way that I felt was very realistic and very interesting. And then to strip his powers away on top of that makes us him. And then the last thing that I really loved about it, because I don't care about Guy Pearce's character at all. I think he's as sucky as Hammer was, honestly. I think the whole like melty arm mm-hmm. thing was a bit much for me. I think that if you had really stuck to Mandarin and then had real Mandarin show up, you would have really had something even better on your hands than what you already did, which was awesome. But the way they treated Pepper in the movie also makes me love it a lot, because they gave her power in the movie that they did not give any female characters in Iron Man 2, the end. You're welcome. Good night. And right. Now it's your turn.
So I will say, I do totally agree with what you mentioned as kind of being an underlying premise of this movie, of basically Tony losing everything and then having to rebuild that. And, you know, he metaphorically rebuilt himself and he literally rebuilt the Iron Man armor. It's just so unfortunate that the film lost that premise partway through. Like that was somewhere in the second act, like that just became a totally irrelevant thing. And they lost it to the whole extremist concept with Guy Pearce's character. And, you know, extremist is it's the premise is cool. And this is something that comes from the comics. And I think it's great. I did not like the execution of it at all. It was too much for me. It pulled me in a lot of ways out of the movie, and it really didn't work for me. In terms of what they did with Pepper, I viewed Pepper as a victim through the entire movie. Oh yeah.
What?
I mean, even up to the end, I mean, maybe with the exception of her final movie, which was partly circumstantial, but I will also give credit that she took that circumstance and turned it into something positive. The journey that Tony took, like I said, got completely lost. And then in the end, blowing up all of his creations simply didn't make sense, because later on he in other movies he rebuilt other ones, so they completely.
I agree with you on that. I think that they dropped it in future movies. That
part of his journey, like he was willing to make the sacrifice to say, fundamentally, okay, I don't need to be Iron Man anymore, or I don't need to create all these things. And then, oh, Age of Ultron, I'm going to build another one.
No, I agree with you in that. I don't think that that's Iron Man 3's fault. I think that's Age of Ultron's fault, though. I don't think that that's an indictment on Iron Man 3, because what they set up into the future is not their fault that the person didn't take it up. But
I mean, I got to say, first of all, for Iron Man 3, they knew that there was stuff beyond this. So I think to do the things that they did with his character in this movie was detrimental, and Age of Ultron actually had to fix that. And Age of Ultron simply would not have made sense if they didn't fix that. So I think there were some issues there. Yes, absolutely. The Mandarin thing was hugely disappointing. And for as much as I loved Ben Kingsley and his portrayal of the quasi fantastic version of the Mandarin, he was phenomenal and it was great. I would have loved in the end if the reveal was, yes, he actually was the Mandarin. He was playing the part of this psychotic manipulated addict, and that was just simply all part of his manipulation. So I would have loved had they done that. We did get a short after Iron Man 3 where they revealed, you know, they had Kingsley's character in prison, and they revealed that yes, there was in fact a Mandarin that was out there. And unfortunately, absent what we might see in Shang-Chi, maybe, because we're still getting the Ten Rings there. We don't know if the Mandarin will or will not be there. But again,
it was mainly fan service, to be very honest. I think people were pissed, and then they were like, just kidding!
Partly, I mean, it seems that so much of the stuff that happened in Iron Man 3 didn't actually, like, get chased down or come to fruition anyplace else. I mean, we had, look at what we had in Iron Man 3. We no longer had War Machine. We had the Iron Patriot. Freaking lame. Yep. It was intentional to the extent that it was made fun of in the movie. So I get that. But then they basically did away with that up until the very end scene of Endgame, not the end scene, but the last battle scene of Endgame, because that was the only freaking armor remaining that Rhodey could have gotten into. That was it. And for some reason, it was still hanging around. It was like, I would have dismantled that thing. Yeah,
I think it was a joke.
I would have dismantled that thing a long time ago. So it's like, yeah. We had that issue. And so fundamentally, Iron Patriot never really came back. We had this psychological journey of Tony, which didn't make sense. It didn't go anywhere. You were completely right that this journey early on made sense for him, and then somewhere in the second act they dropped it, and then in the end he does this symbolic thing and has Jarvis blow up all of his suits, and that meant nothing for the further films. And then the Mandarin thing, really nothing changed as a result of this movie. Nothing changed.
Yeah, but that's never why I like a movie or don't like a movie. I tend to like a movie based on its individual component. And yeah, I do like when it fits into the greater story. But like, I don't resonate with Tony's journey. It's really about Tony for me. I mean, the other stuff is like gravy or... I don't know. I don't like gravy. It's either icing on cake or icing on old banana. You know what I mean? Like, that's, to me, is like, okay. It's really Tony as a person. And I think setting Tony up as a person who deals with anxiety and deals with questioning who he is sets him sets himself up to be somebody who would want to protect himself against an Ultron, or to create an Ultron in order to protect himself, because he has allowed these fears to come in, rather than being a cocky a-hole who runs around and treats everybody around him like they don't matter, rather than... Yeah, his fears are overtaking, and that does happen with, like, the Pepper thing, but I see Pepper standing up to him every step of the way in Iron Man 3 versus everybody giving him a wide berth to do whatever he wants in Iron Man 2, and that's what I do not like about that. But I also think the way he treats Happy when he's in the hospital with the Downton Abbey thing, it's such a small thing, but, like, he rarely shows that, like, caring and what Happy means to him, and it's such a small thing, and it's not like the reason why I love Iron Man 3, but it's merely like another thing that adds flavor to it for me, is his treatment of Happy and how much we see him vulnerable in a male with male relationship that is not like a sexual romantic relationship. It's not a father relationship. It's not a familiar relationship. It's a chosen family relationship, and you really see him in a way that you see, like, Cap caring about Bucky. It's like, you really see that in Iron Man 3, how he cares for Happy in this really, really tender way. And I just think it adds so much flavor to who Tony is. And I don't think that any of that is present for me in Iron Man 2. And when you're talking about such a cocky character that has such a chip on his shoulder, like, I want to see those little ebbs and flows in who he is.
Sure.
The way I want to see that for Steve or Thor too. I want to, or Natasha, I want to see that for all the characters.
Yeah.
I think that we don't see that in Captain Marvel really for Carol. And I think it's a disservice to who she is to not see the ebbs and flows of that, of who she is as a person. And I think, you know, I think that we can always do better, but and to be fair, Iron Man 3 does not even crack my top 10. Okay. So,
I mean, I'll say, I think that Tony's journey in Iron Man 2 is actually more meaningful, because he finds himself again, fundamentally having to save his life, his own life.
Adds to his cockiness, by the way.
He now is needing to fundamentally convene with his father. And so this is his relationship with his father is a thing that kind of hangs over him. And even though his father is dead, he really comes to grips with that relationship, and he realizes who his father really was and what his father was trying to do for him. And so I think that that's a big thing. We see his low point at the birthday party and when he and Rhodey go at it. And then after that, it's, you know, Sam Jackson comes up and it fundamentally puts him in house arrest, and Tony can't argue with it. You know, to the extent that Coulson becomes his babysitter and like is cracking like really demeaning jokes at him.
I do love Coulson in this movie, to be fair.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Love Coulson in this movie.
And yeah, I mean, like, this is just such a great continuation of Coulson's story from having seen him in the first Iron Man movie. And so, like, it's a big teardown for Tony. We see, you know, up until the end, really, of Iron Man 2, we see Pepper and Tony on completely different paths. And she is committed to, we see a big difference where, you know, in the first Iron Man movie, she's committed to Tony perhaps more than the company, but then in Iron Man 2, she is committed to the company over Tony because she realizes all his downfalls. And then in the end, you have this kind of culmination of the two and the betterment of the two. I will admit in Iron Man 3, I mean, there is, especially in the opening scenes of it, you see kind of the perversion of their relationship where Tony is basically living in his workshop, and he sends one of his armors up to greet Pepper when she comes home. And, you know, and she realizes that it's not even him. It's just a suit. And so, I mean, there are pieces that do make sense in that continuation, but I think that Iron Man 3 just like seems to abruptly drop so much of that, of the valuable story somewhere in Act 2. because they get too tied up in Extremis. And Extremis ends up...
It's a lot of Extremis.
Yeah, Extremis distracts from Tony's story, and it distracts from the Mandarin. I think pulling together the Mandarin and Extremis in this movie didn't work, and I think that that actually may have been the biggest demise of it. They needed to stick with one or the other. I think ideally sticking with Mandarin, and doing a bait and switch on the character who is arguably the biggest adversary of Iron Man, that just didn't sit well with me and with a lot of people. So,
you know what I think we can agree on?
Yes.
Is that from the beginning, Marvel presented with a huge villain problem.
Yes.
Huge. And I think the fact that Thanos was their big bad to end all big bads meant that they didn't have to keep a lot of threads mm-hmm. going with other villains.
Yeah.
Therefore, they created too much. The fact that Whiplash and Hammer are both villains in two, and Extremis and Mandarin are both villains in three, was unnecessary. Meanwhile, Iron Man 1 is solid, and Obadiah is a great bad guy,
totally.
All on his own, and he don't need no help. You know what I mean? So I think that, like, when you have such a clear-cut villain, and they didn't in either movie,
right.
It leaves itself vulnerable to this kind of thing. And I think if they had just had a little bit more clear vision to really make Mandarin a bad guy, that, like, even a one-off bad guy, or Hammer, or Whiplash, a one-off bad guy that had power and agency in his movie, we wouldn't have had, like, as big of a problem as we obviously do
true.
With both.
True. Very true.
Yeah. And I very think the true. Rest of it is, like, obviously art. It hits people differently, and that's,
yeah.
you know.
It's art, it's interpretation, it's the things that resonated with us. And so, you know, here's the thing, and I didn't expect either one of us to come out as a winner of this. I mean,
no.
In the end, I still like Iron Man 2 better.
And I like Iron Man 3 better.
And you still like Iron Man 3 better. I think you brought up some really, really phenomenal points as to what, like, some of the good things are in Iron Man 3 that I think I may have been dismissive of. So I think I can now appreciate a little bit better. Maybe I did the same for you for Iron Man 2. I don't know. I don't know that, you know, we can declare a clear-cut winner.
Oh, but I know what we should do.
What's that?
Is have an Iron Man 2 and Iron Man 3 Twitter party where you and I watch it and we tweet it together.
We absolutely should.
Right?
That's something that we should do in the very near future.
That'd be
agree.
Really fun.
I would, and I want to hear from our listeners what their opinions are of the films, and hopefully they'll take into consideration the points that both of us brought up. And I think that both of us were also very fair about the movies, because I am also very critical about certain points in Iron Man 2, just like you were critical about points in Iron Man 3. So
yeah.
I think both of us... I think we both have good perspectives of our favorite of each of these two films. And like you said, it in the end comes down to our own perceptions and what resonates for each of us. So and you know what? It's cool, because we're fine with people enjoying whatever it is that they want to enjoy. I mean,
and proverbial handshake and exiting the
absolutely,
ring.
Absolutely. Even if people want to enjoy Ant-Man, I guess I'm okay with that. I suppose.
Now we'll save that one for another day.
I might look upon you as a lower life form, but it's fine. You can still enjoy it. It's cool, I guess.
Who hurt you?
Ant-Man.
Paul Rudd is a national treasure, sir. That we'll save that for another day.
All right, folks. Well, thank you very much for joining us this week. We hope that we enriched your lives and your enjoyment of the MCU, and gave you a little bit of a respite from the harsh reality of life, as it were. So be smart and be safe and stay healthy and do all the things you're supposed to. We definitely would appreciate your feedback and any questions and your thoughts on which you think is the better film, Iron Man 2 or Iron Man 3. And also why, you know, don't just throw something and say, oh, well, it was Iron Man 2. No. Tell us why. Defend your stance as we did. And also, if you have any thoughts on any of the other stuff that we reported. You know, if you're excited about Rosario Dawson's casting as Ahsoka, if you think Charlie Cox should be Peter's lawyer in Spider-Man 3, you know, hey, we're...
Charlie!
we're all about that. So you can get us a few different ways. You can send us an email, guardians@randomcheddar.com. You can also certainly hit us up on Discord.
You can also find us on Twitter @randomchatter, or individually, I can be found at TWT About Lizzie. Tim can be found at Qui-Gon Tim, that's Tim with two M's. And John cannot be found on Twitter, but he can be found on Instagram @_JonStewart. That's JonStewart. I can be found at The Wonderful Thing About Lizzie, The Thrifty Duckling, or at NITC Media. And Tim can be found at Some Call Me Tim, 1138, that's Tim with one M. And you can find the network at Random Chatter. I'm going to turn it into a song. Ding, 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 ding.
I think it's a great idea, Lizzie. All right, folks, thanks once again for joining us, and we will see you in about a week. Take care.